The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, how HEB became too woke for the GOP, electric vehicles need a place to charge in Texas, and covering state news just got a big boost. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Whereas Charles Butt is a Democrat billionaire who has a long history of advocating for policies contrary to the Republican Party of Texas platform. That's how a resolution begins that was passed by four Texas Republican Senate District Conventions. Many in Texas don't know who Charles Butt is, but they know his stores. He's the chairman of the HEB grocery chain. HEB has more than 420 stores in Texas and Mexico and over 145,000 employees. It's one of the largest retailers in the nation, and it donates 5% of pre-tax profits to charity, focusing on giving to food banks and education causes. But that's not sitting too well with some Republicans in Texas. They want to kick Charles Butt out of the Hill Country Fair. Republican delegates passed resolutions denouncing the billionaire and the political action committees he funds in opposition to school vouchers and other issues. They also accuse Butt and his political action committees of lobbying for amnesty for illegal immigrants, against a ban on sanctuary cities, and taking actions against state voter suppression laws. The resolution also notes that HEB has sponsored drag queen shows for children. HEB's mobile kitchen and disaster relief unit has distributed thousands of hot meals to volunteers and victims in hard-hit areas in Texas. After the Robb Elementary School shooting in Uvalde, HEB and the Butt family donated $10 million towards building a new school. For many in Texas, the HEB grocery chain is held in high esteem. Surveys have shown that there's a lot of brand loyalty for the San Antonio-based retailer. This could be a bad idea for the Texas GOP to ask Texans to choose between the Republican Party and HEB. To tell us more, I'm joined by Forrest Wilder, senior editor at Texas Monthly.
The Texas Republican Party will have its convention here in a few weeks in San Antonio towards the end of May. And ahead of that, the smaller groups meet all around the state to nominate delegates and to vote on resolutions that can be considered the state convention that could feed into the state party platform. So what's new this year is that some of these county and Senate grassroots conventions, at least four of them, have voted to pass a resolution condemning Charles Butt, who of course is the chairman of HEB, the beloved Texas grocery chain, for a number of deviations from the party platform that they accuse him of.
They're saying he's too woke, that HEB is too woke.
Yeah. Specifically, they're targeting Charles Butt as an individual. But of course, to some extent, he's the figurehead of HEB. So HEB gets kind of drawn into the whole picture here. But basically, they're very upset about his involvement in politics and public policy. There's a kind of laundry list of things that are raised as for condemnation in the resolution. But I think that it's safe to say that this was the proximate cause is that he was involved in the Republican Party elections recently, supporting candidates who back public education. And so a big portion of the Republican Party base right now, at least, is very much on board with private school vouchers. He was on the other side of the issue, along with almost everyone in public education. And so that seems to be what triggered this anger and ire at him, which had been building for some time.
Charles Butt, he has given money to improve education in Texas, reading programs, Raise Your Hand Texas, summer camps for educators, administrators. He has been a donor trying to improve education outcomes in the state of Texas, and now that's a problem?
Yeah, and they're calling him, you know, quote unquote Democrat, which, I mean, the irony here is that, like I said, what seems to have triggered it is his involvement in the Republican Party primaries. He was backing a slate of candidates and incumbents who had taken votes against private school vouchers. Most of these individuals are very conservative by almost any reasonable metric, but they became the target of a number of other billionaires in Texas, Tim Dunn, the Midland oilman who backs a number of groups, as well as, you know, Betsy DeVos's group that's been pushing private school vouchers, the whole kind of wing of the Republican Party that is aligned with Paxton and Tim Dunn and is, you know, extreme, I think, in many ways. So, yeah, they're coming after him. It kind of reminds me in a way of the backlash against Taylor Swift, where you have this public figure who's really better known for other things, but dip their toe into politics, certainly Charles Butt more than Taylor Swift, but still it's this kind of you know, weird tangling of the broader culture and then these hardcore, you know, Republican conservative politics.
My experience with Charles Butt is he has directed HEB to source everything that they can from Texas, support Texas agriculture, Texas small business. He funnels money back into the state. Also, HEB, under the direction of Charles Butt, is at every disaster scene with big rigs of fresh water, ice, hot meals. They show up, they help people out all the time. They don't have to do that. When you say HEB is a beloved brand in the state of Texas, this is why.
Right. And I think that's what, I mean, that's kind of what got my attention. I mean, first of all, to my knowledge, I don't believe that the Republican Party, and this is, again, I mean, let's be clear, it's an official, these are officials, official organs of, if you will, the Texas Republican Party. So this isn't like, you know, something that's happening in some obscure, you know, activist group somewhere. This is really the Republican Party, at least portions of it, speaking as an official voice. I've never seen them condemn people who aren't elected officials. They've condemned and rebuked, Speaker of the House Dade Phelan, and other people have gotten crosswise with the hardcore base. But you know, again, to my knowledge, I don't believe that they've ever done this to a private citizen. What's particularly weird about it is, I guess, what you were saying, which is that, you know, they're kind of tangling with the HEB brand, and I think the HEB brand is probably. HEB is one of the few things that brings all Texans together. You know, it's a beloved a grocery store chain, not because they sell food, but because of all the things that you listed, these sort of above and beyond kind of civic actions that they've taken. And Charles Butt's the head of the chairman of the company. So he's obviously part of that, orchestrator of that, if you will. So, you know, has the Republican Party jumped the shark here? Let the listeners decide on that one, but it struck me as kind of odd. It'd be interesting to see whether this is becomes a cause at the convention itself. And that is a moment when there's a lot more eyes, a national spotlight on the Republican Party of Texas. The platform is often kind of a focal point for people to, particularly people outside of the state, to go, what in the heck is going on here? You know, like, wow, this is some really wacky stuff. So we'll see if Charles Butt gets thrown in the mix this time.
So what does it matter that if all Republican Party candidates and elected officials denounce and reject any endorsement, campaign contribution, or association with Charles Butt? What does that mean?
Well, I think they're trying to make him toxic. I think that they're trying to, This is sort of dating me, but there was a time in Texas politics, for example, when trial attorneys were a major force to be reckoned with because they had lots of money, and some of them were sort of ideologically minded, and they gave a lot of money to Democrats. And over time, the Republican Party apparatus chipped away at that. Not so much, I think, because they believed in like fairness in the courts, although some of them did, but really for the architects, the consultants, and the high level people, this was a way to choke off funding to the Democratic Party, and it worked. So here, I think you're kind of seeing something similar in that They don't want Charles Butt involved in public life in terms of supporting causes and candidates because it goes against their agenda. And if you read the resolution, I mean, they're really explicit about it. The basis of the resolution is Charles Butt is interfering with the Texas Republican Party platform and its agenda, and it has to stop. And the grassroots or parts of it are telling the higher up people, the elected officials and all those folks, hey, don't mess with this guy because you're messing with us and we'll come for you.
Reminds me a little bit of Ron DeSantis taking on Disney in Florida, major employer, had a lot of goodwill, and he lost.
That's a great comparison. It's the woke corporation kind of thing. You know, we'll see if this stays at the level it's at, right, which is, you know, at these kind of local or regional level, or if it gets mainstreamed. And I think, like, that's what's happening a lot, right? Something starts out on the bleeding edge, and then it very quickly works its way into the mainstream. So if Greg Abbott starts talking about this, then we'll know that we're dealing again with, like, something that's kind of gone fringe to mainstream very quickly.
Forrest Wilder is the senior editor at Texas Monthly. Group homes offer Texans with intellectual disabilities a place to live with a few roommates and round-the-clock care. But providers say the quality of that care is suffering because group homes can't find and keep enough staff. Advocates blame the low wages set by the Texas legislature. As KERA's Miranda Suarez reports, group home workers have to make life and death decisions for their clients in a job that pays less than some fast food places.
Leanne Capel walks up to the car and says hi to her daughter Cassie in the passenger seat.
You having a good morning? You having a good morning?
Immediately, mom and daughter are holding hands through the window.
So Cassie loves to grab and hug. Sometimes the porter, she'll pull you over.
That's one of the only ways Cassie can communicate. She can't speak, walk, or care for herself. Working families like Capel's can't provide round-the-clock care on their own. So in 2008, Cassie moved into a group home near her mom's house in North Richland Hills. As Capel talks, that's Cassie you can hear in the background.
We're 10 minutes from the group home, so it worked out really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until recently.
After 16 years, Cassie just moved out of her group home and in with her dad. Capel says they were worried about the dwindling number of workers at Cassie's home. Advocates say the dismal pay for group home workers has led to a staffing crisis. Group homes are funded through Medicaid, which means the state legislature sets the base wage for workers. That wage is currently $10.60 an hour, and that's after an increase last year. Capel says these workers deserve more.
This is a full, total body-mind disability that requires someone to care for them constantly. And you can't expect someone to be able to do that working at $10.60 an hour.
Group home operators say $10.60 isn't nearly enough to hire workers or get them to stay. Denise Gassmeyer is CEO of Champion Services, which runs group homes in Northeast Tarrant County. She was hoping lawmakers would offer $13 or $14 an hour at least.
You want to talk about a gut punch. It literally took the wind out of me. I've never been so, like, deflated in my life.
Gassmeyer calls staffing her number one problem. Three organizations that represent Texas group home providers surveyed their members last year. Two-thirds responded they struggle to provide quality care because of understaffing. That could mean there's not enough staff to bring residents out on activities, or an inexperienced, burnt-out worker misses signs of illness in a resident who can't say, "I'm sick." Gassmeyer says the lack of funding has forced her to think about shutting down.
I will have to make that decision, to start closing group homes if something doesn't happen. I have no choice.
For group home workers, understaffing means working overtime on top of the other jobs they have to work to stay afloat.
And if you follow me.
Princia Mabiala works at one of Gassmeyer's group homes in Grapevine.
Here we have her little kitchen. Like I said, where the magic comes.
Mabiala serves four clients here, who she calls her ladies. Cooking is her specialty. She also picks up her ladies from their day program, helps them use the bathroom, gives them their medication, everything to keep them healthy and happy.
You have to have the passion of doing it. If you don't have a passion, if you just take it like a regular job, you will not last.
Mabiala does hair on her days off. She says she doesn't make enough at the group home to support herself and her daughter.
My rent is like $1,500. I still got to eat. I still got, you know, to take care of what I have to do, and it's not easy.
Mabiala hopes the state legislature will raise the base wage. She says she wants to dedicate her life to helping others, but she doesn't know how long she can survive doing this. I'm Miranda Suarez in Fort Worth.
We got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The electric vehicle industry is booming, and EVs are quickly growing as a viable alternative to traditional gas-powered cars. North Texas is home to more than a third of all EVs registered in the state. As KERA's Pablo Arruzpeña reports, that means there's a growing need for better EV infrastructure across the region.
The entrance to the offices of LG Electronics in Fort Worth is abuzz with employees and visitors. The company, known for making typical household electronics like TVs and cell phones, is now in the business of building electric vehicle chargers. Today, business executives, local leaders, and reporters are here to see the company's brand new state-of-the-art EV charger factory. It's the first LG factory in the country of its kind. Mike Kossel is the Senior Vice President of U.S. Sales.
So what you're looking at is our first entry of a Level 3 charger, DC ultra-fast charger in the United States, and the product will be manufactured in this facility here in Fort Worth, Texas.
Kossler says this factory is the final assembly site for new EV chargers that will be shipped across the country. It's an important part of the larger fabric of EV infrastructure that's currently being woven across North Texas and the rest of the country. The Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates as many as half of all vehicles sold in the U.S. will be EVs by 2030. Inside the factory, Fort Worth Mayor Maddie Parker tells KERA that this new facility bodes well not just for Fort Worth, but for the region as a whole.
I really do want Fort Worth to be partnered with companies like LG Electronics that have firm understanding of what the future looks like, and they really push communities to think differently and be more innovative.
Recently, North Texas received $15 million from the Department of Transportation to build more EV chargers throughout the region's 16 counties. Department of Transportation Undersecretary Carlos Monge visited Dallas in January to make the funding announcement. He says the Biden administration made a commitment to put 500,000 chargers in the ground by 2030.
We're going to beat that by 4 years, and that's because industry's coming together, local communities are coming together. They want to do this, and this money that we're announcing today is an important step in that process.
The new stations are starting to fill in so-called charging deserts, but there are still gaps, says Lori Pample-Clark. She's the Clean Cities Director for the North Texas Council of Governments, which is in charge of implementing new EV chargers across the region. Almost 95,000 people drive EVs in North Texas, more than any other part of the state, and Clark says the map of infrastructure in the region is quickly changing. Up until recently, EV drivers could charge their cars in limited spaces, mostly high-income neighborhoods.
It started to even out just a little bit as more kind of traditional fuel retailers get into the EV charging game. Some of your big convenience store chains have started looking at installing EV charging.
Local governments are also responding to residents' requests for more EV charging stations. In Dallas and Mesquite, drivers can charge their cars for free at select locations until September. In Dallas, most of the chargers are clustered in the city's downtown, with more scattered around the north side of the city. There are virtually no chargers in southeast Dallas.
That's something that we're really engaged with our local governments, in particular our cities and counties, on trying to figure out how we can help solve that.
As the state of EV infrastructure continues to grow rapidly, Clark says that growth needs to include equitable access. That way, everyone in North Texas who has the option of driving an EV can, no matter where they are. I'm Pablo Arauz-Pena.
I've been saying this on the air for more than 25 years. What happens at the State House will frequently impact your life more than what happens in Washington, D.C. or at City Hall. But somehow, state news doesn't get the coverage that it deserves. Frankly, because it's hard and it's expensive. And because there's a lack of journalism oversight in the halls of the state capitals, the people frequently suffer. Bolstering state and local journalism is what the Collier Prize for State Government Accountability is all about. And working with the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications, they will be expanding on that. University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications Dean Hub Brown explains state-focused journalism is stressed and under-resourced.
With newspapers and broadcast operations all shrinking, a lot of times when they do that, the coverage areas shrink, and the places where a lot more resources are needed, like state government reporting, where you want to have people at the Capitol, you want to have people there during legislative sessions, things like that. Those are big investments, and those are among the first to go off oftentimes. And so we see state house bureaus getting smaller and smaller and then disappearing. And a lot of obviously incredibly important legislation is going through the states. And a lot of those things eventually end up being things that get discussed on the national level. And we'd have a lot more of a heads up about what those ideas might be if there's people at the state government level covering those kinds of things. So it's that, and it's also the activities of what a state government does outside of legislative sessions. And if there's not enough resources to cover those kinds of things, those are big policy decisions and big policy actions that the people don't get to hear much about.
We have this thing that Ronald Reagan called New Federalism. It was his plan to break up federal authority and push it down to the state levels. And so the idea was that the states are closer to the people and can make decisions that are better suited for individual areas. One size doesn't fit all, according to that view. But also, they seem to have calculated that there wasn't a whole lot of accountability in the state house. Do we see the results of that?
I think we absolutely do. I think we have state government that is very often less amenable to sort of sharing with the public the information that's important. There's a lot of times the legislature. I covered a state legislature for a great many years, and a lot of times the legislature will listen to voices that are in the room, and oftentimes those voices can be lobbyists. They can be various interests that actually can financially support a voice at the state house, and that's not often the people. And so it's a little bit harder to hear from what the people want, and it's harder for the people to know what's happening at the state level. And so when that communications loop kind of breaks down, the ability of state government to really respond to what the people wants also tends to break down. And so, you know, we want to make sure it's really about, giving people the information they need to help in their own state government.
Speaking on a program called Texas Matters, and so we do make covering state issues and state policy. That's how we mm-hmm. we made our bones. And that seems to be something that we're all about. But it's difficult to get other media to pay attention to this because they seem to be caught in between, national coverage, which is easy for them because there's a national bureau and they do all this stuff in D.C. and then you can just local reporting. And you got the house that was hoarding cats, which is very cinematic and, can lead the news. In between, there's not a lot of room for covering the attorney general. Just took a plea deal for some corruption case that he's been avoiding for the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not visual. It's not cinematic. It's complicated, mm-hmm. a little dry. And they give you, as you know, because you were in TV, and you have 20 seconds to tell that story. And it's somewhere in the B section before you do the weather mm-hmm. toss. It just doesn't seem like the media and the medium is conducive to telling these stories, which is why long-form journalism is where this really kind of lives.
That does seem to, that is often the case. I think the, it does take familiarity. You need to understand what's happening in various offices of state government, what they're doing, how they're trying to, accomplish their objectives. What is their understanding of the needs of people out there, and how do they respond to those kinds of things? That takes time. And it takes time to sort of get some of those issues as well. I mean, a lot of times coverage of government really does mean getting out of the Capitol and actually going and talking to people at the center of these issues. You know, if you're going to do something about, you know, the problems with getting insurance, let's say in the state of Florida, you want to talk to somebody who's having trouble insuring their home. And you want to make sure that when you do that, you talk about what's on offer at the legislature, and you go back and you talk to folks and say, well, you know, what are you doing about this? What kinds of solutions are out there? What's possible? And that's going to take a ton of time. It's not always. I mean, oftentimes you'll see that there'll be a big flash of an issue, like a corruption scandal or something like that, that makes the maybe local commercial news, that sort of thing. And you know, that's all fine and well, but the real work of government is a lot of issues that are beyond that or outside that actually matter to people, that matter to their pocketbooks, those sorts of things. And it takes investment of time to do it.
How is the Collier Prize going to be instrumental in helping people cover state news?
I think one of the big things that the prize does is it shows managers, it shows media what is possible with a little bit of investment, the kinds of stories that really help people, that help people to understand what's going on, that inform people about major issues and controversies in their local areas. It shows media organizations what can be done and how that can actually help folks. And also that it shows the public that media out there are actually doing a lot of work on their behalf. And some of that stuff gets real big results out there. And we want to make sure that that process is still there, that that media as a watchdog over government is still a role that is taken seriously in this country, and that is done every day, and that people understand that this is one of the benefits of having, you know, free media in the country.
The prize seems to be expanding. Y'all want to do more with it. Before, it was a big prize, but now with this additional gift, y'all seem that y'all want to do more and be able to provide opportunities for training and the recognition of other state journalism.
Absolutely, and one of the things that is a part of this gift, this amazing gift from Nathan Collier and Collier Companies, is really about bringing some of those people who have been in the trenches, who have told these stories and been recognized for them, bringing them to our students and showing our students what is possible when they understand the importance of good accountability journalism. And when we're able to do that, that really enhances what our mission here in the College of Journalism and Communications. It improves the level of discussion around these things and inspires students to sort of, you know, be the next generation of great accountability journalists out there.
Hub Brown is the dean of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters episodes on our website at tpr.org. You can download and subscribe to us wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.